Random House Audible presents La Cucina by Lily Pryor. Read for you by Lisa Passero. Prologue. I lie luxuriantly on the table, the cool, silky oak sticking to my naked flesh. Rump, thighs, plump. This night is the culmination, the final lesson. By the light of the candles, I stretch out and watch L'Inglese as he moves gently among the shadows on the far side of the kitchen, the clattering of his pans punctuated occasionally by the sounds of the summer night, the buzzing of a mosquito, the braying of a mule. L'Inverno, the Winter, Chapter 1. Tip the flour in a heap on the table. The old oak table, legacy of Nonna Calzino, smoothed to a brilliant luster by all the years of daily use. Not too much flour, not too little, just the right amount. Fine flour milled from durum wheat by Papa Grazzi at Mascoli. Sprinkle in some sea salt, a good measure. Add some fresh eggs and some extra egg yolks, sufficient for the amount of flour, and also some good olive oil and a very little cold water. Using your fingers, mix the liquids into the flour, combining your ingredients until a smooth paste is formed. The eggs may feel slimy to the touch, but this is natural. Knead well, using the heels of the hands in a forward, downward movement. Knead just until the arms begin to ache and the small bead of sweat starts to trace its way down the spine from somewhere between the shoulder blades to the cleft between the buttocks. This, of course, in winter. In summer, the sweat pours down the face and neck, dampening the clothes and making droplets on the table and the flagstone floor. When the dough is smooth and elastic, brush it with a little oil. Cover it with a damp cloth and leave it to rest, for it too is fatigued. While you are waiting for your dough to relax, you can leaf through the pages of a magazine, observing this season's latest fashions, or gaze from the window at young Maria flirting with the postman on the street corner below. Look at Fredo riding by on his bicycle, or at a pack of stray dogs escaping from the dog catcher, and at life in general passing you by. Then you may begin the rolling. Dust the table lightly with flour and divide your dough into 8 equal pieces. Taking one piece, begin rolling by moving the rolling pin in a motion away from you, pressing evenly to create a rectangular shape. Continue thus until your sheet of pasta is long and thin and about the thickness of the blade of a knife, the knife that slit Bartolomeo's throat, slicing through his beautiful young flesh like a cotello through lard. Cut the sheet in half horizontally and hang it over a pole to dry for 5 minutes. Repeat with the remaining pieces of dough to make 16 sheets. Slice carefully the length of each sheet, forming the thinnest strips you can. Again, let these dry on the pole for another 5 minutes. Here you have your spaghetti, which, with a delicious sauce of ripe tomatoes, basil, sleek eggplant, and ricotta, you will eat for lunch. When office workers, acrobats, and slaughtermen return home for the siesta, and for a few brief hours, the restless city sleeps. Following the murder of Bartolomeo, I made pasta night and day. I retreated into the kitchen in the same way that some women retreat into convents, as Pasquale Tredici did after her sweetheart, Roberto, was gored to death by a bull. I had always loved my food. In those dark days it was all that could give me comfort. I did not emerge from myself in post-exile in La Cucina for a long time. I assuaged my grief by cooking and cooking and cooking some more. At that time, I was still living with my family on the farm in the Alcantara Valley beneath the citadel of Castiglione, on the far eastern side of the island of Sicily, near the slopes of the great volcano. The valley of the Alcantara is an area famous for its fruitfulness. Its olives are more succulent, its oranges juicier, its pigs porkier than any other region. The abundance of our land is reflected in our people, who, as a general rule, are wholesome, hardy, and strong. The virility of our men and the fecundity of our women have also been noted. Families tend to be large here, and the urge to mate is strong among both humans and animals. By a strange phenomenon, multiple births are as common among Alcantara women as they are among sows. We give birth to many twins, triplets, even quadruplets, and identical little faces fill the classrooms in the local school. We are so accustomed to seeing duplicates and triplicates of farmhands, housewives, and goatherds that they fail even to draw notice, except among strangers. But few strangers come here. In our lush valley, they say the fire in the loins of the inhabitants draws flame from the smoldering mountain that dominates our skyline. It casts its spell over the lives brewing in its shadow, where for millions of years it has ejaculated its own life force, clothing its slopes in rich black lava. Chapter 2. To begin at the beginning, my name is Rosa Fiore. I am of the Fiores, an ancient family that has lived here in Sicily, it is said, since the time of the Greeks. My family was made up of my parents, Madre and Padre Fiore, and, until my 9th year, my 6 older brothers, Luigi, Leonardo, Mario, Giuliano, Giuseppe, and Salvatore. When I was 8, my younger brothers, Guerra and Pace, came along. My family was, I guess, a typical Sicilian family, large and loud. My mother, Isabella Fiore, was a small but formidable woman who ruled over the fattoria like the avenging angel that looks down from the frieze on the front of the Chiesa di San Pietro. Everyone was scared of her. Papa said her black eyes could spit venom like an asp, though I never saw her do this. My papa was large and bluff and terrified of Mama. Dear Papa, I never saw him without his mountain cap, even indoors. He even took baths in it, though I have to admit that he bathed infrequently. He even wore it in bed, in case of fire during the night, or, more likely, an eruption of the volcano. Papa also wore a large mustard plaster on the back of his neck his entire adult life to cover a suppurating boil that would never heal. When I was 12, Papa disappeared. But wait, I'm getting ahead of myself. Mama and Papa never once spoke a word to each other, not where I could hear them. They maintained an arch distance from one another while retaining an unquenchable desire for the pleasures of the other's flesh. This desire was so strong that they were often found engaged in a frenzied coupling in the hayloft, the cowshed, or the fields. It wasn't until I became an adult that I realized what they had been doing. As a girl, I was innocent as a lark, like Mama intended me to be. So the numerous occasions when I came upon them fucking one another senseless didn't register with me until much, much later. After the hungry dragon that lived inside her loins was satisfied, albeit briefly, Mama would adjust her skirts. She would treat Papa to a look of utter disdain, which never failed to paralyze him, speeding the demise of his already dwindling member. Having done so, Mama would return to the unending duties of the farmer's wife. From this happy union, when I was 8 years old, came my twin brothers, Guerra and Pace, war and peace. On the night of their birth, an inflamed moon hung low over the valley, and the local people gathered by its light outside the fattoria. They came because they heard...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?